Good morning. I'd like to start with a fun exercise. I'm going to pick on a volunteer. Who here wants to tell me what DKA stands for in the medical field? Diabetic. Are you an ICU nurse? Good. Okay, so what's the lab value that we look for when they're on the insulin drip? What do we look for before we shut the drip off?
Their anion gap.
Anion gap. Wonderful. What are the two greatest commandments that Jesus gave in the New Testament? Yes, excellent. What a wonderful intersection of people we have here this morning. I love that. Okay. So I appreciate very much the opportunity to be able to share this morning. I hope the Lord is able to use my words to inspire you and to comfort you and to challenge you. So I'd like to begin by telling a story. I got permission to tell this story, so do not report me for any HIPAA violations. A minister in our church about a year and a half ago was diagnosed with melanoma on his nose. He had been a roofer for a number of years, and he had a resection of the cancerous tissue on his nose. And when he came home a couple days later, a day later, something like that, he needed to have a bandage change. And it's a very complex bandage change with the eyes, and his wife was very overwhelmed, and he couldn't quite piece it together. So I got a phone call, and they asked me to come over and see if I could help dress this nose. And I did. It took me about 20 minutes. By the time I drove there, went over there and got everything ready and bandaged it up, and I went home. I didn't think too much of it. It was a very short, easy thing for me to do. And then later, a number of months later, it was highlighted. I guess the wife had taken a picture of me bandaging his nose. And I remember being struck that it was so impactful to them. And reflecting on that, I realized my opportunity to help came in a moment of stress, in a moment of fear. They did not know what the outcome of the cancer treatment would be. Thankfully, he is well today. I apologize. I'm going to have to use tissues this morning. I'm fighting a sinus infection. So to me, it was an easy thing to do, but to them, it was a helping hand in a time of unknown. And it left a deep impact. To this day, many people in the church still remember that I changed one dressing on his nose. It took me 20 minutes. So what can we learn from this story, and how can we apply that to our lives today? And that leads me to my center statement for the day, and that is, a simple act of kindness can resonate with meaning far beyond the moment. So keep that in the back of your mind as we go through and answer this question before us today. And so what is that question? Actually, before we do that, a simple act of kindness, we kind of understand this intuitively. So those of you, there's a few of you that aren't in healthcare, I think we all understand that a smile can light up a room, a handwritten note can leave a lasting impact. I have a note that my grandfather wrote me a number of years ago. He was an electrician, and he wasn't known for writing, or he wasn't well educated. I don't even think he had an eighth grade education. And I mowed his lawn for him one time when I was visiting, and he wrote me a handwritten thank you note. I still have that note. It's meaningful. So we understand this idea intuitively. So let's apply that to our question today. How can we help our local congregations? What can we do as medical professionals? We have our own practices, right? Not individual practices, but we practice healthcare. How can we use that knowledge and that expertise and that experience to help our congregations? And I want to answer the question in 4 points. Before we can answer how, I believe we need to answer why. So that's going to be my first point. Why do we help? What is the foundation? Second, I appreciate Ryan talking about burnout. We're going to talk about facing the reality of burnout so that we are able to help. And third, we need to learn how to set healthy boundaries and recognize our limitations. And then finally, I want to talk about some of the practical ways, hands-on, tangible, what can we actually do to help? So to start, why do we help? Oh, I did have one more joke. Just to prove to you that I do work in healthcare, I have an Awala water bottle. If you don't have one, you're missing out. Okay. End of joke. So why do we help? Well, as our lovely ICU nurse pointed out, we are called to love our neighbors as ourselves, right? That could be the entire answer to the question. But I want to dig a little bit deeper. So if you would turn with me to Matthew chapter 25, we're going to read scripture beginning in verse 31. I'll be reading from the English Standard Version this morning. So think of this passage as the centerpiece for why we help. Why do we do what we do? Why are we called to healthcare? So beginning in verse 31 of Matthew chapter 25, it says, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people one from another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right, but the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world.'" I'm going to pause here for just a second. This is a penultimate moment in human history where Jesus is dividing. This is the final judgment. He is dividing between the goats and the sheep. I don't think I can accurately depict in the English language how significant this moment is. And what does he say next? "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Isn't that what we do as healthcare professionals every day? I think it's significant, and it reaches deep into my own heart that our calling is listed here in Scripture directly related to the final judgment. Continuing on, verse 37, "Then the righteous will answer him, saying, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?' And the king will answer them, 'Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me.'" I think about this scripture as I work in the hospital setting, and I walk past a patient, and they're yelling, "Water, water!" We've all heard that. It's kind of annoying sometimes. But then I remember that it is my calling to stop and give water. The other night, probably about a month ago, I was completely overwhelmed. I was floated to a step-down unit, had 5 patients, relatively unsafe assignment, and I called the nursing supervisor, something I don't do frequently. I said, "This is not okay. I need help." And one of the reasons I was frustrated, I like to use the term righteous anger, but I was frustrated. I had an alert-oriented patient who was lying under a sheet and a blanket with no gown on. She was completely naked because we did not have gowns on the unit. Righteous anger. Yes, administrator's fault. So, needless to say, we got a gown. She was okay. Oh, the reason she needed a gown, we were doing bowel prep. So, that's fun. I'm just blown away by the fact that this is like a pulpit and I can talk about bowel prep. And nobody's discussed it. Well, maybe you are, but it'll be okay. So I think it's interesting to me that when I go into work, what I do, what you all do when you go into work, is so closely related to what it's talking about in the scripture when it says, "Naked and I clothed you," right? So why do we do what we do? Is it so that we can be? This nose is just continuing to run, I apologize. Is it so that we can be on the right side of history, so that we can be one of the sheep instead of one of the goats? And I submit to you that we, in response to that, say, God forbid. That is not why we help, although that is one of the benefits. Why we help, why we labor in the kingdom, is to expand the kingdom of heaven on earth, to draw hearts to the kingdom of heaven. So I'd like to share a story about a patient I had when I was about, I've been a nurse for 5 years, and I had been a nurse for about 1 year. We had a frequent flyer, non-compliant dialysis patient in his mid to late 20s. He was a type 1 diabetic and often came in DKA. And he was frequently a code violet, was very non-compliant with treatment plans in the hospital. He never liked being in there, but yet he continued to miss dialysis treatments and went into hyperkalemia and all of these things, right? Typical ICU frequent flyer. I appreciate that. Thank you. And I had this patient many times. He was about the same age as me. I always remembered him. And I was always tried to be kind to him. So I went into work one night, and I had this patient again. The day shift nurse was just completely at her wit's end. She was like, he's refusing blood pressures. He's in the ICU. He's refusing blood pressures, sugar checks, labs, everything. It was a hotel room with poor room service. And it just so happened that that night I had brought some Little Debbie's oatmeal cream pies to share with the nurses. Yes, I'm one of those awesome people. No, I'm not. And I remember just in report, just thinking like, man, what can I do to help this guy tonight so that I can check his sugar? Because who knows, it could be 500, and who knows what it is, right? We don't know what his blood pressure is. And pretty early on in my shift, probably within the first hour, I went in the room and I said, hey, my name is Ken. I go by Ken as a nurse because otherwise people call me Keith. No offense. And I said, hey, how are you doing tonight? I'm Ken. I'm going to be your nurse. Do you like Little Debbie oatmeal cream pies? And, you know, he was like, yeah. I was like, I brought some to share with the nurses. Do you want one? And he could not believe that I offered it to him. Could not believe it, that I would treat him like a human being. Because how many times you go to the hospital, it's a DKA patient, you can't even have a graham cracker because there's too many carbohydrates in it. I gave him two. Maybe that was irresponsible. I gave him two. I gave him some water, some sugar-free ginger ale. And when I set it on his bedside table, I'm not completely irresponsible, people. I set it on his bedside table, and he said, whatever you need to do tonight, just come on in and do it. I put his blood pressure cuff on his arm and took good care of that man for 12 hours. You see, a simple act of kindness resonates with meaning far beyond the moment. So that's why we do what we do, right? It's not about us. It's about changing hearts. And I don't know if that man is still alive or if he's come to know Jesus or any of those things. But I hope that my interaction with him was a positive moment in his life that he can remember. And he did not go into DKA in that admission, since I didn't do anything bad. So to answer the question, I think we've answered the question, why do we help? Because it is the very purpose we hold on this earth. No pressure. So speaking of pressure, I'd like to talk about the second point, which is burnout. The reality of burnout in the healthcare world is probably understated. We go in, we work long shifts with difficult people who are not having the best day of their life, and we come to a place of mental, physical, and emotional exhaustion. So how do we deal with this? Well, we could probably spend an entire 3-hour session just on burnout, and I appreciate that Ryan brought it up this morning because it's very important. How many of you have heard the statement, too blessed to be depressed, right? I completely disagree with that statement, right? As Christians, we are not immune to burnout. We are not immune to depression. We are not immune to anxiety. I think Christians still go to the hospital. So what can we do about this difficult reality, and what lessons does Jesus give us as good Mennonites? We look to the life of Jesus. So let's turn to Matthew chapter 14, just a few chapters back. I believe Keith actually read this, a little bit of this last night. I appreciate that. In this passage where Jesus feeds the 5,000, it comes right after the death of John the Baptist. And that's very significant because Jesus needed time to relax. He needed time to rest, to grieve the death of John the Baptist, his friend. But I think in this passage, if we look closely, Jesus demonstrated how to serve selflessly while also taking care of his own needs. So let's take some time and look closely at the passage here in Matthew chapter 14, verses 13 through 23. Start reading verse 13. Now when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a desolate place by himself. So here Jesus is trying to get away a little bit. John the Baptist is dead. I need a moment. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. Nothing contributes more to burnout than very needy people. I'm sure you mothers know that very well. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd. And what was his response? He had compassion on them and healed their sick. Okay, so Jesus had compassion and healed their sick. That's good. Maybe you could consider that the bare minimum. Maybe. Now when it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place, and now the day is now over. Send the crowds away to go into the villages and buy food for themselves." But Jesus said, "They need not go away. You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "We only have 5 loaves here and 2 fish." And he said, "Bring them here to me." Then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass, and taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing. Then he broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowd. And they all ate and were satisfied, and they took up 12 baskets full of the broken pieces left over. And those who ate were about 5,000 men besides women and children. Immediately, he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. I submit to you that there is a lot that is hidden in these verses here. First, Jesus faced the circumstances that could have contributed to burnout. I don't know that Jesus ever got burned out. I don't know that God, the divine being present in man, was capable of being burned out. But I think he faced the circumstances. I would have been burned out. You know, all of these crowds and healing their sick and all of these needs, constant, constant, constant. And they're following him when he needs a moment to grieve. I think he faced the circumstances of burnout. What was his response? Compassion. And so he healed their sick. And then when he had an opportunity to send them back to go get food on their own, instead he said, "No, bring them here, I will feed them." He went a little bit above and beyond. So those are some of the things that Jesus did. The final thing that he did was then he actually did send them away and go up in the mountain to pray. So I think we can learn from that. Let's have compassion. Let's see the work that is right in front of us. And let's finish that work that's in our hands. And then let us go and rest. And why do we rest? It is so that we can return to our work and to our calling from a place of rest. Because when you've had that good night's sleep, you're a much better healthcare provider. But I also want to take a look at what Jesus did not do, because I think it's just as significant. Jesus did not do 3 things. 1, he did not abandon his calling. right? His calling was to care for the people on earth while he was here, while he walked the earth. He healed and he fed, okay? The other thing he did not do was he did not complete his ministry before going to rest, right? He did not finish his work. He finished the work that was right in front of him, and he did it well. And then he retreated to rest, and then he went back to his ministry. And finally, Jesus did not do the bare minimum. As Christians in healthcare, we are called to do things well and to not do the bare minimum. So when we are helping those in our churches, let's be compassionate. Let's care about those who are in need. Excuse me. And remember that our calling is to care for others as ourselves. So if you're feeling burned out by your occupation, by your home life, whatever it is, I encourage you to contend with it and to heal so that you can work from a place of rest. So moving on to my third point, so something else that can contribute to burnout is we need to set boundaries according to our limitations. So how do we do that? Let's talk about this in a meaningful and practical way. So what is a limitation? So limitation is I am one person. I have an RN license. I am not a physician. I can't prescribe you medications. I don't know as much as a physician. I have real limitations. I have a wife and children. I have limited time. Those are limitations, right? What is a boundary? A boundary says, no, I can't do that because maybe a limitation that I have. I don't have time right now. I need to go tend to my children. I need to spend an evening at home. I need to go to work. These are boundaries that we set because of limitations. So we need to be willing to say no. I believe it was Ryan this morning, you talked about saying no. I don't know why you said that right before you said you're looking for nurses at Mountain View, but okay, you do you. So you can tell Ryan no, and he said it. As healthcare professionals, let's all be honest. How many of you would self-describe as a people pleaser? I mean, I'm okay, like all of you. Okay, good. We are people pleasers. We like when people like us. We don't like when people don't like us. And so we want to help. But we have to be willing to say no. So I'm going to say a statement here. And I'm going to say it again so you can hear it well. Saying no is not a rejection of your calling to help people, but rather an acceptance of your own limitations. And I'll say it again. Saying no is not a rejection of your calling to help, but rather an acceptance of your own limitations. We have to be willing to say no. If we do not learn how to say no, we will get burned out, and we will we will not be able to help. That's why we have to be able to say no. So what are some of the limitations that we have? I mentioned them earlier. Moving quickly through some of these. Time. Do not neglect your other obligations. Are you a Sunday school teacher? Are you involved in the local school? Whatever you're doing, you have to be able to make time for that. Scope and experience. What are you allowed to do? So as an RN, there's a lot of things I can't do that a physician can do. As a CNA, there's a lot of things you can't do that an RN or an LPN can do. I'll tell you a story. There's a man that goes to our church, and he has some joint and tendon issues intermittently, and he always finds time to ask me about it. He's always like, what's this going on with my finger here? And I tell him, I'm an ICU nurse. I have no idea what's happening in your hand. If it's not a radial or an ulnar pulse, I have no idea. I can't help you. Was there a doctor that, do we have tendons in our bodies? I don't know. But the point is, I have things that I'm very knowledgeable about, and I have things that I have very little knowledge about. So I tell him, maybe go talk to your doctor. I don't know. So we need to set boundaries that are in accordance with our scope and with our experience. So that same person can sometimes be difficult. Is there someone in your church group that you go to on Sunday and Wednesday and whenever else that doesn't understand the boundaries that you try to set? How many of you have someone like that? You can raise your hand. Okay, some of you have interacted with people like that. They don't understand. They don't get it. They don't understand that you're an RN. I don't know all of these other things, or you're a CNA or whatever you are, or I don't have privileges. So how can you handle that? Well, one of the things that I like to use is some humor, right? It can kind of dissolve the problem. And I use the same phrase with my children whenever they come to me with something that is just not a real problem. It's like, my finger hurts. So I suggest amputation just immediately. Start reaching for my pocket knife, right? My favorite is when they come with me with like my head, my ear, amputation. It can kind of diffuse the moment a little bit because they might come to you with like, I really need some help. You just kind of, you know, hey, everything's okay. It's fine. Don't tell anyone I said that. Another good response is, I don't know. Maybe you don't know, right? I don't know about your tendons, about your joints that well. Another good response is, did you tell your doctor? Do you have a doctor? Do you have a PCP? Who is your PCP? Here's a list of 12. Another one is, be specific. I don't know about bones. As an ICU nurse, I very, very rarely work in the trauma ICU, mostly in the medical. If you have sepsis, DKA, I can help you. If you have a broken bone, talk to someone else. But also, like I hinted at, know your local resources. If someone in your church says, hey, I have this problem. I know in Middlefield, Ohio, which I'm from Middlefield, I think I failed to say that last night, which is about an hour outside of Cleveland, there is a... Well, apparently I don't know my local resources that well. But if they have a problem with where they need physical therapy, something like that, there is a local clinic that I can refer them to. There is an Amish lady in our community that does wound care, like homeopathic wound care. Know your local resources. So when that person comes up to you, they're looking for a solution, right? They're saying, I have this problem and I need help. Sunday morning at 12:02, well, afternoon, is not the time. Say, oh, I know about this place. Why don't you go there? They're excellent. You can diffuse the situation and send them on their way to someone who can actually help. Because remember, saying no is not a rejection of your calling. You actually might be doing them more good by sending them to someone who has time and resources. So be fast to defer. If you're not able to help because of your own limitations, you are not a failure. It's probably best that they get independent medical help. So moving on to my last point, that is, what can we do practically? So I'm going to talk a little bit about what I've done in my community, and I don't want this section to sound like I am just amazing and wonderful. I'm not. Ask my wife. And... Speaking of which, I do want to take a moment to just be grateful for all of the work that my wife does so that I can do, that I can work within my calling. She doesn't get much glory or honor or whatever it is for vacuuming, for sweeping the kitchen floor, and keeping the house clean, and keeping the children fed. She does a lot more of that than I do. And so her work allows me to do some of the things that I'm going to talk about here. So this is not a section tooting my own horn, but rather something that I'm able to do because of the goodness of God and the helpfulness of my wife. So what have I done in my community? A few years back, I was invited to give a talk on a Sunday evening. They said, you got 45 minutes or 40 minutes. Talk about anything related to healthcare that you want to talk about. And so I was like, oh, wow, I have no idea what to talk about. But it was an open forum to bring some healthcare knowledge to the Christian community. One of the things I talked about was code status, a little bit of how do we interact with the apparatus that is the American healthcare system as Christians, right? We have spiritual, moral obligations from what we believe, and then how do we interact with this apparatus that goes from 911 all the way through, I don't know, your outpatient physical therapy. Just helping bring some understanding, because whatever section you work in, I promise you know more than the average layperson in your church. Maybe you don't work in a hospital setting. Maybe you work in a nursing home, something like that. You can offer some knowledge about that area. Maybe you work in wound care specifically, and you can give some information about local resources. So be willing to share the knowledge that you do have. Another thing I did related to code status, something I'm very passionate about as an ICU nurse, because many, many people have very inappropriate code statuses. I will never forget the 93-year-old that had a peg tube placed who is just moaning and no family ever visits. Just, I can't. So I made a handout. I did not bring it here for legal reasons, no. But it's a front and back piece of paper that has all of the Ohio code statuses that you can choose, full code, CCA, CC. And then there's a little visual image on there about when do these take effect, how do you do that, here's the form, all of these things. So I made a handout that I can give to people to help them understand. And people in my community have responded very well to that. Something I'm individually passionate about, I took maybe 3 or 4 hours to put it together initially and have done some edits since then. So that's something I've done in my community. Maybe you're thinking, well, I'm a volunteer CNA. I don't know about any of that. I promise you there is something you can do in your community. And I hope this next story highlights that a little bit. There's several aging couples in our church. And I take a little bit of time once in a while, probably not as often as I should, and I go and I visit with them. And inevitably, I'm an RN, they're old people, we talk about health problems. And I visited this gentleman in our church who has heart failure, and he wears compression socks. And I just said, you know, how's your swelling? His left leg is always more swollen than his right, and just kind of checked on him a little bit. And he puts on his own compression socks. And I noticed, immediately you guys know what I'm talking, I love this group, it's amazing. the left sock was a little bit rolled down and had a beautiful ring of compression, okay? Causing more harm than good. And so what I did was I said, well, I'm very glad that you're putting on your own compression socks. Here's what I recommend. Go to the Quest for Health store in Middlefield, Ohio, 10 minutes down the road, and buy zipper compression socks. You can put them all the way up your leg and then fight that zipper. Get it up, right? And so my little visit, 10, 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever it was, I noticed something and I made a small suggestion. Those of you that are CNAs, maybe go visit the elderly. Go check out their bathrooms and be like, maybe you need a grab bar. That would help you. What about a shower chair? What about those things you can just screw on the end of the plumbing and you have a sprayer? These little things, I promise you, are so impactful. If you can prevent one fall, you know you can prevent that hospital admission, you can prevent that downward spiral. So any of you, whether you are a physician, and physicians, you can go look at people's bathrooms too and see what problems there are. So little things can have a big impact. Another thing that I've done in my community is I have, because I'm a male nurse, a rare species, I can give showers to elderly people in our church that don't want their adult daughter bathing them, right? So giving them a little bit of dignity, those of you that are men in the profession, I encourage you to reach out to those elderly men in your church. How can I help you? What can I help you with? Is there something I can do? I've done that, and I've charged a small amount as well. It can be a side business for you. This is not something that I've done, but something I want to do, a basic life support class. I think young mothers should know how to do the Heimlich maneuver and back blows and basic CPR. Everybody should know CPR, right? We all agree with that. And another thing that I've done in my community is I've been very involved at our church school. We have 19 students currently. I'm the part-time principal at the school, so I don't teach any particular homeroom, but I do teach physics, physical science, and botany this year. So I'm teaching science classes. I'm doing administrative work for the school because I don't have a 9-to-5, and guess who can show up during school hours, right? This is a unique opportunity that we have, majority of us. If you don't work a 9-to-5, some of you nurses do, fancy OR nurses. I'm not bitter at all. So get involved at school. Hey, is there a need for an aide part-time? Can I do some checking work? Can I show up and have a fun science education day? Maybe you don't want to do something consistent. Show up and, you know, do some chemistry experiments that turn things into different colors. It'll blow their mind. There's a lot you can do in your local community if you look for opportunities. But what does this require from us? I think it requires us to have a posture of our heart that is willing to help. Going back to the simple act of kindness that can resonate with meaning far beyond the moment, it's not a grand gesture that is what people are looking for. People are looking for a willingness to take time out of your day and a willingness to serve and to love. You know, if you're overwhelmed, I think of my wife when she's battling some young boys that are just full of energy and attitudes and all of these things. If you come home with coffee, sushi, something, you know, it means a lot. It is a entering into that space where you care, say, I see where you're at, and I see that you're having a hard time, here's a reprieve, right? So we need to have a posture within our hearts that's willing to serve and willing to love. So I encourage you, as you work in healthcare, connect what you do on a daily basis, answering call lights, changing beds, prescribing medications, whatever it is that you do, connect that with your work in the kingdom of God. Because at the end of time, that is what will separate the goats and the sheep. Take time to rest. Take time to care for yourself. Whatever that looks like, go for a walk. Do some deep breathing exercises. Set healthy boundaries based on your limitations. Recognize your limitations. Be willing to say no. And finally, maintain a posture of willingness to help. Look for those opportunities in your life where you have those small chances to make a big difference, to change someone's heart and to love someone and to care for someone as if they were your loved one or yourself.